Chapter 10. All out of sorts. Catty Bree struggled to stand, putting her left hand on her injured hip for support. The movement sent her thoughts back across the centuries, to that other time when she had been gravely injured in this same hip. This wound was not nearly as bad as that, she was certain, and yet her healing spell had not brought her the comfort and strength she had expected. It still ached and barely supported her. "What is it?" Zack asked, showing her that her discomfort was obvious. Catty Bree shook her head. "The cold, perhaps? I don't know. I used a powerful spell, but the healing didn't quite revive me." "The wound is worse than you believed?" Jarl Axel asked from deeper in the cave, where he sat beside Artemis and Treri, who was still unconscious. When she turned to regard the mercenary, he pulled his hand from his magical belt pouch, looked at the chunk of ice he was holding, and threw it aside with a huff. "The pack seems to have opened when I dug and crawled into the snowpack," he explained, and thrust his hand back in, this time pulling forth a log covered in snow. "I'm quite sure I have enough of that avalanche in my bag to construct a mountain giant made of snow alone," he lamented. He brushed the log, then tossed it to the floor before him. "It is this place, perhaps," Jarl Axel told her, while he continued retrieving the firewood from his pouch. "I have heard that magic might work differently this far north, as it is different in the Underdark. Perhaps there are limitations." "I don't know," Catty Bree said again. "There is something." She shook her head and looked out of the cave at the vast white plain down the rocky hill before her. "Amiss?" Jarl Axel asked. "Different," Catty Bree corrected, and she was still shaking her head as if she couldn't quite put her finger on it. "Like the path of the sun out there."
"I felt it too," Zack admitted.
They left it at that, for none of them seemed to be able to express the sensations any more clearly. Catty Bree followed Zack to the pile of wood, kindling perfectly sized and split. Zack took out his blade of light and ignited the sword as they went, but didn't immediately plunge it into the woodpile when he stood beside it. For Catty Bree put a hand on his shoulder and directed him to move away, then kneeled quite gingerly beside the pile and began properly arranging the firewood to best take and burn. With great effort and an assist from Zack, she stood back up and stepped aside. Zack thrust in the fiery blade. The wood, wet from the snow and ice, crackled and popped and barely caught.
"Back up," the weapon master bade Catty Bree, and stepped away beside her, transforming his bright blade into a bullwhip. Up it rolled over his shoulder, and Zack brought it snapping down across the firewood, cutting a line of fire down the side of the pile.
Catty Bree immediately reached through that planar tear with her ring, feeling the heat and power of the fiery plane and sensing the preternatural sentience beyond the cut. She coaxed forth a bit of that sentience as the tiny balls of fire dripped from the planar tear onto the logs, and she grinned as she dominated those living flames, instructing them to attack the wet kindling. When the fire had more fully caught, Catty Bree called one of the living balls of flame off the pile and sent its light deeper into the cave, leaving puddles that quickly hardened on the floor, which was rock and ice. She limped along behind it for a bit, moving it deeper still. The cave seemed endless, a winding, slightly descending tunnel going deeper into the mountains, until the tiny elemental finally expired.
"Ice everywhere, even in here.
How is it so cold?" Zaknafane asked. "It's summer."
"Icewind Dale can get quite cold in the summer," said Catty Bree, "but not like this." "But the sea of moving ice is always mostly frozen, and more so the farther north you go," Jarl Axel added. "My guess is that we're farther north than that even."
"And it is still light outside," Zack remarked, motioning to the cave exit.
"We've been here for many hours and it's not even twilight."
A sudden epiphany sent Catty Bree moving toward the daylight. She paused and cast yet another healing spell upon her bruised hip, sighing in relief as the warmth flowed through her.
Jarl Axel nodded, and she returned the nod, then started on her way again, the two drow close behind. Staring at the shining whiteness outside, the perplexed woman tried to get her bearings. The ground fell away before her still,
moving toward that same white plain she remembered from the mountain. But the sun seemed to be moving west to east, if she was indeed looking north. How is that possible?
I am certain that is north. But it cannot be, Jarl Axel said, obviously sharing her confusion.
No, it is, Caddy Bree told him. But the sun.
I think we're looking right over the top of the world, Caddy Bree explained.
But... A call from Artemis and Treri cut short Jarl Axel's reply, and the three rushed to get near to the man. And Treri rubbed his face and with great effort managed to prop himself up on one elbow.
Bad choice, that drop, he said, his voice weak.
The choice saved your life, Jarl Axel replied. The whole of the mountainside rolled down and would have buried you and carried you all the way to the bottom, where we would likely never have found you. He looked at Caddy Bree. Even there beneath the ridge, I was afraid we would not find you. Quick thinking, good lady, in bringing Guinevere to your rescue.
But where were you? Caddy Bree asked.
Why weren't you buried with us?
Because he's Jarl Axel, and Treri said.
Because we're drows, Acnafane corrected.
How are you feeling? Caddy Bree asked, slowly kneeling again as Treri managed to sit up.
Like a horse kicked my head, and the host tower fell on my back.
He stopped short and looked all about.
Where's my hat?
Probably under the snow, Zack said.
We have to go get it, Zack scoffed.
That mountain is miles from here and uphill.
Before Entreri could argue, Jarl Axel produced the chapeau and handed it to him.
I thought you might want it.
He looked at Caddy Bree, smiled, and produced another item that had been left behind in the snowpack, the figurine of Guinevere.
Exhaust this day's healing power, he told her, on yourself and on Artemis. Let us rest while the fire burns.
In here? She asked. The cave goes very far back. In a land like this, I doubt many caves are uninhabited.
Neither you nor Artemis is fit to travel, I fear.
Don't worry, Zacnafane and I will take turns on watch, Jarl Axel said.
You two need the rest more than we.
And I'll make a fine meal for when you wake. Zacnafane is a maestro with the blade, to be sure, but merely a novice with a ladle.
I've seen him fight, Entreri said. He could probably beat you with a ladle.
He sucked in his breath and let out a relieved sigh as Caddy Bree sent a wave of healing magic through him. She used most of her spells, and the effort exhausted her more than it should have, reminding her that she too had suffered some grave injuries. So she pulled out her bedroll, set it very near the blazing fire, and crawled in. She was soon fast asleep. Zacnafane crept along the winding, now descending tunnel. When he had left his companions, with Caddy Bree and Treri fast asleep, he had promised Jarl Axel that he wouldn't go far, but he wasn't about to consider their cave camp secured until they learned if this was someone, or more importantly, something else's home. He looked back the way he had come, much farther than he had intended. He couldn't ignore the smell, though. There was something more in here than the stone and ice of the floor and walls. He scanned back around, wishing there were more glowworms than the few that offered only a bit of light. Directly across from him, he noted the green eyes of his scouting partner, Guinevere. He could still see the way despite the meager glow with his drow low-light vision, but a little bit of illumination would help a lot. Before them was a flight of descending stairs, crudely hewn but certainly crafted by tools, although by the look of them, that might have been many centuries before. Since each step was almost half Zack's height, he hoped that to be the case. Beyond the long descent, the wide passage leveled, then forked, although it seemed that after only a short way, both corridors emptied into the same room, which was lit by a soft red glow. Zack motioned for Gwen to go left while he moved right. He slipped into the chamber down low and along the left-hand wall, guessing correctly that the room opened wider to his left than to the right. He peered in and paused, trying to digest the curious sight before him. The room was noticeably warmer, and Zack figured the heat to be coming from a large globe suspended from the ceiling, which was also providing the red glow. He gave it only a glance, though, too mesmerized by the rest of the chamber. The walls were natural and uneven,
but had huge shelves cut into them at various heights, and on each shelf were bundles that looked like bedrolls, perhaps, or large piles of clothing. Directly across from Zack stood a solitary figure, humanoid but truly giant and hulking, 4 times his height, he guessed. Stripped to the waist, the behemoth seemed a mass of muscle. It looked to Zack as if King Brunner, or one of his powerful shield dwarfs, had been enlarged many times over. A gigantic double-bladed axe leaned against the wall beside the giant, its pointed tip resting on the behemoth's shed heavy jerkin, beside a helm adorned with the antlers of a moose, and massive pauldrons fashioned of what looked like monstrous bear skulls. Zack moved in a bit more to see the rest of the room, and to see if Guinevere had exited the tunnel. He spotted her in the doorway, crouched and waiting, and motioned for her to hold. The giant seemed to be fiddling with something, and finally turned enough for Zack to make it out. At first he thought it a huge ball of snow or ice, but when he noted the loving care the brutish giant was showing it, Zack realized that it was an egg. An egg as large as the ball of flame Catty Bree had produced on the mountainside. And there were more, many more, along the other shelves in the chamber. The giant rolled the egg over in its hands, then lifted it up toward the glowing ball and peered at it intently. That's when Zack noted the giant's face, shaggy and with a beard that reached almost to its waist. He couldn't really tell the behemoth's skin color, as it was bathed in the red glow, but deep in his memories, all the way back to his studies at the Drow Academy, whispers of Frost Giant entered his thoughts. He was pondering that when the giant yelled, "Hey!" and put the egg back on the shelf and hoisted the massive axe. Zack thought to run, even started to turn, but changed his mind and went into the chamber, standing upright and at ease, left hand open and raised. "Bror," he said, a word he thought might mean friend in the ancient language of giants. Didn't work. The giant roared and leaped for him. Zack's right hand came up, holding a hand crossbow. He fired off a shot before leaping into a roll to his left, coming around to his feet expertly. Cassidy in one hand, the magical hilt in his other. Despite his clever evasion, he couldn't help but grimace at the thunderous sound as the massive axe slammed the corner where he had been, taking stone from the wall. He noted the small quarrel hanging from the giant's chest as it turned to face him. The behemoth hadn't even grunted at the impact, and doubted that any of the poison had gotten through this one's thick hide. The second missile to strike the behemoth was more effective, however, as a large black form flew over Zack Nefane's shoulder, lifting high into the air, claws raking ferociously. Lines of blood erupted on the giant's chest, and Gwen's claws pulled clumps of hair from the great beard as well. Zack called upon his magical hilt, bringing forth the bullwhip and charged. His opponent roared in anger and in pain, and brought its right hand slamming onto the panther's back, then pulled Guinevere free, taking a fair amount of its own skin with her, and hurled her across the room with frightening ease. The whip cracked at the giant's shins, cutting lines of fire and lines of blood, and the brute howled all the louder, now obviously in pain and clearly not much liking the fire. It stumbled for Zack, who rolled between its legs, cutting a backhand across the tree-sized left calf with a fine edge of cutter. He saw Gwen then, her haunches unsteady in the shadows, but stubbornly coming forth from the wall. More importantly, though, he saw the giant turning, roaring, coming on in measured, deliberate steps, cutting down the distance between them, boxing them in. Zack backed slowly, trying to measure the room, trying to figure out his best escapes. The giant charged suddenly, its huge axe sweeping large circles before it. Its strides wide and balanced steady, ready to spring out left or right as its puny opponent broke. Zack noted all that instantly and doubted he'd get far enough to the side in time to avoid being hit. So he turned and he ran, not to the side, but straight for the wall, floor shaking from the pursuit. He reversed his grip on Cutter as he neared the wall, then leaped and stabbed the sword with all his strength and momentum right into the stone. The brilliant Cassidea plunged in deep enough to provide a secure foothold as Zack pulled himself up, planting his foot upon the swaying hilt, then sprang from there upward and turning. And as he came around, so too came the roll of his whip. Even though he was high off the ground, the giant still loomed above him. But Zack's anticipated angle proved correct, and the whip snapped across his enemy's eyes. Zack dropped, hoping to land and roll out of harm's way, but the giant just plowed forward into the wall, its legs smashing Zack into the stone, stealing his breath, and he was sure cracking some ribs. His whip became a blade of light, and he struck frantically, enough to loosen the dazed and blinded giant's press and allow him to half-run, half-fall out to the side. "Oh, run away, dear Guinevere," he said, when he saw the wounded panther going in at the giant once more. He stumbled, leaning on the wall for support, as he tried to catch his breath and slipped, tumbling into a small alcove, or starting to, until a huge clawed hand smashed into his shoulder, throwing him out from the wall. As he flew away, he brought his sword across desperately, and in the flash of light he caught a brief glimpse of his new assailant. It was Mammoth, but not nearly as much so as the frost giant to the side, and surely not a giant kind or any other humanoid Zack had ever seen. Leaning forward, as much on all fours as upright, neckless, it had a massive wide head that was all mouth, with more of a snout than a nose, and tiny, wide-set eyes. Zack could barely comprehend it. He looked into the stuff of nightmares, and he wished that this was indeed just a nightmare. Guinevere flew above him, hurled again by the wounded giant, and slammed into the wall where she dropped to the floor in a heap with one last squeal of pain. Zack took only a single step toward her before realizing the futility. He turned for the hallway and he ran for all his life. He heard the blinded giant flailing and screaming, then heard a second voice calling for the brute to calm, and in a language Zack understood. Drow.
Catty Bree sat bolt upright, gasping, "Guinevere!" She let her eyes adjust to the dim light, the fire burning low beside her. She spotted Jarlaxle a bit farther into the cave, crouching, ready, and peering into the deeper gloom. She looked to Intrary's bedroll, but he was not there, and she scanned all about for him and for Zack. She did spot Intrary, moving toward Jarlaxle, but then, on the mercenary leader's signal, rushing across the cave and disappearing into the shadows as surely as if he had turned invisible. She pulled out the onyx figurine, holding it close and immediately recognizing that Guinevere was gone, back to her astral home. And it had been a painful departure, Catty Bree sensed and feared. Catty Bree spent a moment considering her magic, sorting her spells, then scrambled to her feet and flicked her belt buckle, bringing Tolmeril into her hand as she rushed to join Jarlaxle. "What is it?" she whispered. "Where is Acnaphane?" He held up his hand to urge silence and whispered, "Coming, I think." There was some sound deep down the tunnel. Catty Bree slipped to the side a few steps, near a protective jag in the wall. She knocked an arrow and went down to one knee, watching. Zack came into view running, or rather stumbling. His right hand, in which he held his sunblade, was up against his left shoulder, while every step made his left arm bounce limply at his side. He started for Jarlaxle, but turned to Catty Bree as soon as he spotted her and crumpled to the wall beside her. She was with him immediately, her bow on the floor, her hands guiding her eyes as she tried to inspect his wounds. A deep and vicious gash had been torn right through his fine leather armor and the superb mithril shirt underneath, an ugly wound made by a powerful claw. Catty Bree had to wonder if he had somehow tangled with Guinevere. The woman dismissed the thought for now and closed her eyes, calling upon the divine powers of the goddess to bring forth a spell of healing. Then she inspected again and was dismayed, for the wound seemed no less foul. She had to decide how much of her magical energy she would expend with potential enemies approaching, but it was clear to her that having Zacnaphane back up and in the fight would be the greatest benefit of all. So she cast again the most powerful healing she could offer. The wound mended, though not as much as she would have liked or expected. She shook her head in frustration. Was there something strange here, magically amiss? Was this a spell plague returning of sorts? She prayed that it wouldn't be that, looked down to the tattoos on her forearms and shook her head. She calmed by reminding herself that the magic had felt somewhat disjointed since they had arrived up here, like everything else. Was it now diminishing? She put her arms around Zacnaphane as he began to slump to the floor, guiding him down softly to a seated position. Then she rushed back to her bedroll and grabbed some bandages and salves, returning immediately to her work on the weapon master. His breathing seemed raspy. His entire side was soaked with his blood. "Well met," she heard, and it took her a moment to realize that it had been spoken in the drow language. Not common, not undercommon, but decidedly drow. She jumped up and turned back to Jarlaxle to see another figure approaching him. A woman. A drow. She looked at Zack and went back to her bow. The eye under Jarlaxle's magical eye patch flickered, and he knew at once both the truth of this visitor and the fact that she was trying to magically read his thoughts. "Here," the drow said to him, holding forth Kazideya. "I am sorry for the confusion. The giant didn't know that you were not enemies. I hope your friend isn't too badly injured, and the great feline. I don't know where it ran off to." It took Jarlaxle a moment to sort through the statements, for while this woman was speaking drow, little of what she had said would have been understood in Menzo Berenzon. She was using an older version of the language, archaic in wording and in dialect, and very different in sentiment. Jed Nassad. Jarlaxle filled his mind with images of the city of shimmering webs and let go of the protective magic of his eye patch for just a moment, letting the newcomer hear those thoughts. He immediately brought the mental shield back up, however, for the eye patch's other property, true sight, had already shown him more than he needed to know. "Jed Nassad," he said aloud. "Your accent makes me think you're from that city, or that your family came from there at least." He gave a polite bow, removing his hat for just a moment, which was all he needed. "Indeed, and quite perceptive," came the response. "And you're from?" "An area not far from you," Jarlaxle said, and he used the more modern drow language, hoping to give pause to one of those before him and a call to action to the other. "Near and behind you, if you're looking south." Jarlaxle was looking south. He knew that Artemis and Treri, lost in the shadows of the cave, would understand. The drow woman looked at him curiously. "And where is that?" "You ask a lot of questions," Jarlaxle replied sharply, and he began to monopolize the conversation, excitedly so. He spoke of a city of shimmering webs, retelling his journey with Zacnaphane, or at least using that long-ago journey as a basis for his ridiculous and nonsensical blather. He saw the woman narrow her eyes, focusing intently. Yes, she was indeed trying to get into his thoughts. Yes, he was holding her attention. Finally, she held up her hands and bade him to stop, and he did stop, talking at least. For he began pumping his arms, his bracers putting daggers into his hands that flew off with every downstroke, a line of missiles streaming at the creature, which was not a drow at all. The monster threw aside the illusion, growing in size, towering over Jarlaxle, and suddenly resembling more a bipedal frog than a drow, with mottled skin, clawed hands, and a huge head and mouth. It batted aside many of the daggers, accepted the hits of many more. A ball of flame came into its hand, and it threw the fire at Jarlaxle, forcing the drow to hold and defend, then to fall aside with a yip of pain. Up came those huge clawed hands, and the creature started for the drow, but an arrow sparking with lightning slammed it in the chest and drove it back a step. Another arrow came in, and a third, and the monster threw its hand out toward Catty Bree and projected a magical, glowing replica of that hand right before her, which grabbed at Tall Marill and held it tight. A second attack on the woman came almost immediately, a ray of fear that enveloped her and told her to run away. She fought it and struggled against the grasping magical hand, growing strong enough in defiance to push aside the dewy armor of fear and consider her spells. Jarlaxle caught his balance and brought forth two more daggers, snapping his hands repeatedly to elongate them into swords before turning back to meet the foe. He saw then another flame coming his way, a smaller one, a pea of fire, and the massive fireball erupted a moment later. The creature croaked in victory, then snarled at Catty Bree. "We will be back for you," it promised, in that same ancient dialect, only now croaking and trilling like a frog around the edges of the words. Then, with a flash, it disappeared, and Catty Bree saw Artemis and Trary standing right behind where it had been, two hands on the hilt of his powerful sword as he thrust it forward to where the monster had been standing. To where the monster was still standing, invisibly, she realized, as the beast came back into view, now with a gleaming red blade of Karin's claw sticking out of its chest. And Trary retracted the sword with a great tug that brought it back up and over his shoulder, and wasted no time in striking again, a roundhouse swing that cut down across the monster's back with such power that it sent the beast flipping sidelong into the ground, where it hissed and sputtered and expired. Catty Bree fell over from her tugging as the magical hand blinked out of existence. She looked to Jarlaxle, fearing that the fireball had destroyed him, for the heat of the blast had reddened her face, she was sure, even though she was well out of the killing radius. "Jarlaxle," she called, and Intrary followed suit, running forward, pausing only for a heartbeat to plunge his dagger deep into the monster's frog eye.